TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, what do you think of my new ringtone?
Oh, Chris, that is bound to get your attention. I hope the ringer is not too high on your phone there because you may accidentally crack some windows or some mirrors or maybe a glass in your house. So I would tread carefully, my friend. Tread carefully.
It's bound to get my attention and maybe to get on my nerves as well. But
I would suspect so.
Yeah, but I think the best way to describe that ringtone is infectious.
Yeah, that's what we're going to call it.
All right. Yes, today, everyone, we're going to be talking about Grand Nagus Zek as we discuss the 11th episode of Season 1 of Deep Space Nine, The Nagus, as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of the series. Here's a quick rundown of the story. Having heard that some of Quark's holosuite programs are quite alluring, Grand Nagus Zek, leader of the Ferengi Alliance, pays an unexpected visit to the station. As he shares his plans for Ferengi business expansion into the Gamma Quadrant, he also reveals that it's time to retire and pass the Golden Staff to the next Grand Nagus, Quark. Zek's sudden death puts a target on Quark's back as Zek's son, Krax, teams up with Rom for a power grab. In the end, Zek returns from the dead, actually a Dolbargi sleeping trance, at just the right moment to save Quark's life and teach Krax a lesson. And Rom, who understands that a Ferengi should never allow family to stand in the way of opportunity, gets a promotion to assistant manager for policy and clientele as a reward for his treachery. So, Matthew, I guess a good starting point for this story can just be the Ferengi themselves, because it's the first episode in DS9 that we get that's really focused on the Ferengi, where Quark, Rom, the Ferengi are carrying the show. And going into it, let's just say you're a first-time Niner, and I told you this was going to happen, you might be a little bit concerned about it, and you might want to skip it, because we know what happened when the Ferengi were introduced on The Next Generation. We know how they were then used throughout the rest of the series. But I think that this episode redeems the Ferengi. Not in terms of their values, by the way, but in terms of their value as a race and as characters to be used for storytelling.
I think that's a good point, Chris, in the sense that I think what it does is, you know, it changes the characters from being something that would be a military threat to being something that is more of an economic threat. And I think what it clearly does is it moves them into the place of cultural critique of our culture then and now. You know, this idea of want and greed and the type of like crony capitalism run amok, you know, the way in which, you know, that can absolutely be corrupted to, instead of benefit societies the way that it has, it can be a detriment to societies when this type of thing happens. And so I think absolutely, you know, we are 100% redeeming the Ferengi by taking them away from the whips and the fur and the weird dominatrix looks that they had, and mm-hmm. and then creating and crafting for them really this whole other type of milieu to be playing in, mm-hmm. type of thematic structure to which we then watch the rest of the Ferengi episodes through. And so I really appreciate the work that they did here, because you also have them create a fleshed out society, right? That not right. all Ferengi are the same, you know, and we even do that on the show itself, in the sense that Rom and Quark are very different type of Ferengi.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, we're also starting to do that here with Nog. And so mm-hmm. each one of these Ferengi that we have on the show represents a different path that's going to be taken by Ferengi as we move forward throughout the series. Mm-hmm. And I think I just really love that. And again, by moving them away from being any kind of, you know, threat militarily, mm-hmm. it really makes them much more interesting characters.
Right, because they never really worked as a military threat. And then once that flopped in The Last Outpost, they just become this foil for Picard primarily throughout The Next Generation. But here, like you say, they create a fleshed out society, and I think that the best outcome of doing that in terms of storytelling and in terms of DS9, maybe there are two. One is that it shows, and Armin Shimerman has said this about this episode and how it set up the Ferengi, is that it showed that, well, not just the Ferengi, but the series itself, it showed that DS9 can do comedy. And you and I often talk about the fact that DS9 is probably the funniest of all the series.
Right.
Even though, not counting Lower Decks these days, which is an actual comedy, but of all the live action series, it's probably the funniest, whereas people think of it as being the darkest and the most serious. But mm-hmm. as right. Shimerman said, this really showed that they can tell very serious stories, but at the same time, they can mix in comedic stories, and it all works. And I don't know that that would work so well with any of the other characters that we have on the show. There's just something about Quark that makes that possible. And then when you surround him with people like Rom, as Rom comes to be in this episode, which we can talk about a little bit as well, and then expand that to a circle of people like Grand Nagus Zek, then it works really well. And then the other thing about what they do with the Ferengi here and setting up for DS9 is the fact that they've created an entire culture through which they can talk about our own world and talk about yeah. humans and greed and disregard for others in favor of one's own profit or benefit or position in society or whatever it is. And that's what science fiction does. That's the core of science fiction. That's when it's at its best. And to really make that work, you need to have an actual society that has some diversity to it that can mirror our own. And mm-hmm. I never would have imagined that the Ferengi would be the ones who would fill that role, play that role, but they set them up that way here, and it really works.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think one of the most interesting things that happened as I was rewatching this episode, I was really struck by, we see this culture clash between Ferengi values and the values of, say, humanity at this time, Bajorans kind of at this time period. You know, I would say most other races other than Ferengis, mm-hmm. their values clash, right? And, mm-hmm. and because the Ferengi are all about the greed, and greed being good. I mean, they're Gordon Gekko run amok. And so I think the the most interesting part of that is that, you know, Star Trek tries to walk the line of never necessarily saying out loud that some values are better than others. And mm-hmm. yet what they show us here is clearly how Ferengi values are not ones that we should hold, that are not good, and that there are some mm-hmm. values that are superior to others because of the impact that they have on the society around them. And so, and then, I mean, if you want to dig even deeper, the question kind of has to become, well, why are they better? You know, and so you mm-hmm. get real philosophical real fast. But the fact that this episode is making that juxtaposition with, and in many ways, without making any apology for making that juxtaposition, I think is so fascinating. And I really appreciate Star Trek making this point here, because I think it is important, because not all values are equal. And we make those kind of calls all the time. And the question becomes then, and the very difficult discussion becomes, okay, how do we make the determination of which values are better than others and which ones we should be following and why that's the case? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, if we do live in a universe where there's no absolutes, then you throw that in there too, that makes it even harder to answer. And so just again, the amount of depth from an episode about the Ferengi mm-hmm. here, I think is 100% amazing. And I was really fascinated rewatching this to be starting to go down this ladder of ideas where it just felt like, wow, this is really asking some very deep questions. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does something that TNG, for the most part, didn't do, which is to really explore an aspect of culture in this way where you're just focusing on an alien culture. Because normally we do get the moral messages in The Next Generation, but it's our heroes flying into a situation and interacting with an alien culture and then leaving, and it's generally through our eyes. Right. And, you know, the original series would actually often tell you right or wrong. Next Generation did to a large extent as well. DS9, we always talk about as Shades of Grey. And this is one of the early setups for that becoming the tone of the series. But just having this ability to focus entirely on another culture for an entire episode. And when we do dip into it from another angle, we dip into it from Jake's interaction with Nog, or O'Brien's interaction with Nog briefly, Jadzia and Benjamin talking about how to handle the situation with Jake a bit. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of dipping in like that, but otherwise the whole story is,
right,
you know, it's kind of an absurd story. You've got the Grand Nagus faking his death to see if his son is ready to take over. You've got Quark strutting around as the Grand Nagus. You've got Rom plotting to kill Quark. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that the Grand Nagus' son doesn't realize that his father isn't actually dead. Right. And yet they've got the scene where they're selling off bits of
yes.
his dad. So it's just absurd, everything that's going on. But the ultimate message of it, I think, comes through. But one more thing about the situation here, because it is involving family members, is that you and I talk about the importance of family a lot. We've been doing that on The Artificial Tango as we went through Picard Season 3, which is very much about family. And here we're introduced to the rules of acquisition for the very first time, actually. And we get rules of acquisition 1 and 6. And the 6th one is to never let family stand in the way of opportunity. And that, again, when you talk about values that are clearly not the values that we want to support or uphold, I think that would be one of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I thought it was really interesting. You know, you mentioned and you brought up the way that TOS would very much blatantly kind of tell you what to think about a situation. And it was interesting to me that this episode does that same type of thing with the morals that it is encouraging you to follow, but it does it in a way I think that is much more subtle by just allowing the story to portray those in the different characters. And I think the key then becomes actually Jake, right? In the sense that he lives out the values that his father has taught him, which transcend those the culture in a way where you can clearly see that what the Ferengi are proposing is not as beneficial, good, or I would say even right as compared to what Jake is offering and what his father has taught him. And so to me, that is just utterly fascinating. And again, it's the place where, you know, we talk a lot about the way in which Deep Space Nine is the one that's most respectful of the original series because it's constantly referring back to that. But in some ways, too, it also mirrors much of the way and the moralizing, I think, that the original series did. It just doesn't in a way that isn't so in your face.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And about Jake and Nog, the way Jake begins to transfer the human values, it's hard to call them human values because not all humans share the same values, of course, but transfer what his father has taught him, which I think are very good values. I think Benjamin Sisko has been a great father to Jake, and he's, I say he's suspicious about what Jake is doing, but it's more because he's concerned about Jake and he doesn't want Jake to get mixed up with a kid who might lead him down a bad path. I mean, I think about some of my friends when I was in junior high school, especially, and some of the mischief, shall I say, that we got into that maybe I wouldn't have gotten into on my own, but I didn't have someone like Benjamin Sisko guiding me to help me stay on the right track. But I turned out okay. But I can understand as a father how Benjamin is feeling. But I love Benjamin's reaction when he goes to the cargo bay because Jadzia told him, you should go and tell Jake to come back and eat his dinner. And when he just realizes that Jake is teaching Nog how to read, Avery Brooks says everything with his face. Yes. And then at the end, when he just hugs Jake and kisses him and tells him, you're a great boy and go be with your friend. Just that father-son relationship that we come to know so well in this series just stands out so well here. But what I love about that part of the storyline, even though it's a minor part of the story, is that it really supports those Star Trek values of embracing someone who's different from you, finding a friendship with them, helping them. It does a great job of contrasting what's going on with the rest of the Ferengi story, right? Here, helping versus greed on the other side. And it also sets Nog's character on that path that eventually takes him into Starfleet. And it also sets up Rom's character to start to be different. You know, he acquiesces quickly when the Grand Nagus can't believe that he would let Nog go to a school taught by a human and being there with other students who are not Ferengi. But you can see that Rom is thinking about things a little bit differently for his son as well, in the same way that Benjamin does for Jake.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this whole episode is so much about different struggles. You know, everybody seems to be a little bit on the struggle bus. And, you know, you have specifically this struggle of Jake with his friend and their different values and how to find a way to overcome that. And then, of course, you have Benjamin dealing with the struggle of his son and how to raise him in this type of environment. And, you know, to trust that he has raised his child well, and then trust that Jake, when Ben is not around, will do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because he has been taught well. And of course, we, you know, Ben is able to see he absolutely has taught his son well, because what we can absolutely see is that Ben has taught his son well. And again, there's that subtle reinforcement of what we were talking about with the values. And so, and I think this is one of the best parts about the episode too, is that we're not forgetting that Ben is a father. And that this is still an important storyline, and it's going to be an important through line of the entire series, because it's a hallmark of his character. And so to really be able to see this play out in this episode is actually pretty beautiful. And, you know, I think it's the type of thing that, you know, any parent who's watching this, who has young children and is kind of at this point, is thinking, oh my gosh, I just, you know, I hope the same thing for my kid, right? I've trained them well, I've taught them well, and now I have to begin to trust that they're actually going to live out their lives well when I'm not around, because I'm not around as much as I used to be. And so I just think it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. As a parent, I really connected with the story, and also the comment that Sisko makes to O'Brien, when O'Brien says that if it were him, you know, he would go and tell Jake that you can't see Nog, you know, he's a bad influence on you. And Sisko says, well, I wouldn't do that because he would choose between me and him. And I don't want him to have to do that. I don't want to force him to choose between us. And O'Brien says, why not? Sisko says, because I'd probably lose. And that's something you also learn as you get older as a parent. But O'Brien says, I doubt that, sir. And Sisko says, that's because your daughter's 3. Wait until she's 14.
Yes.
And, yes. You know, but it was a real situation that you may encounter as a parent if you talk to someone who's not a parent and they really see things differently, but you've learned from your experience. Now, the part about Molly being 3, I don't think that that was accurate, because this episode is about a year to a year and a half after Molly's birth on The Next Generation. So I think she's not 3 yet, but we'll let that pass.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, you get here that I think works so well is the fact that by allowing this series to be focused so much on just the everyday lives of these people, you know, we are getting to see something that we just have never seen in Star Trek, which is parenthood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's one of the things where, you know, we get to see it from Miles's perspective, the struggle of family, of course. We've talked a lot about that before on the Orb. But of course, with Ben as well, raising his son. And then, you know, you have people like Dax, where, you know, she's been a parent many times and kind of getting to pepper in her advice from
but
her
not
experience.
Very successful at it, apparently.
Not necessarily. And so, you know, I think there's just something that's really beautiful about that, though, because, Star Trek is about the human adventure. And one of the biggest human adventures is family and parenthood. And so for Star Trek to then touch that in the series of Deep Space Nine, I think is one of the things and one of the hallmarks that really sets it apart from the other shows. And and mainly because it's so straight up, in the sense that, yes, we just have actual parents. You know, Picard was a father figure to people. Janeway was a mother figure to people. And, you know, but we actually have just actual parents, you know. And then, of course, Voyager, we get some kids that actually get to be kids as well. Or we see, like, new parenthood with Tom and B'Elanna. But, you know, it's just, this is the show that actually set the benchmark in the sense that, no, we're going to explore all sides of what it means to be alive in the 24th century and be able to discuss it. And I think that is something that's really fun.
Right. It shows hands-on parenting. And on Voyager also, we got like Seven being kind of like a mom to Naomi, things like that. And of course, on The Next Generation, we did have a parent all the way through, which is Beverly with Wesley. Yes. But what we saw was, and it's primarily it's because of how the show was written in the late 80s and the early 90s and women on television. But we see Beverly being very hands-off as a mother in what we see on the screen. It was more like, I have this brilliant son. He's on this starship. He's going to be nurtured by people like Geordi and Data, and I'm going to let him have space, as we come to hear her say recently, and he will be fine, right? Whereas here with Benjamin and Jake, we see a real hands-on situation where, you know, you've got a parent who is somewhere that they didn't necessarily want to be, and they've had to bring their child along with them, and their child really doesn't want to be there. And you've got to, in that case, really have a bond so that your child feels loved and feels like they can adapt to the situation they're in. And I know this is not at all the core of this episode when people think about the Negus, but I do think that this is the standout part of the story itself, right, in terms of it being a Star Trek story and the messages that we look for in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, I think that the A story is very effective, if we want to go back to that one for a bit, in establishing the Ferengi, who they're going to be on the series, and also setting up future stories, right, because this sets up some interesting stories we get later on with Grand Nagus Zek and his desire to seek profit in the Gamma Quadrant, as well as future family elements for Quark and Rum.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, this part of the show is also about parenthood, because this is all actually about Zek trying to see if his son is ready to take over, right? Mm-hmm. In what we would might consider kind of terrible parenting. Really nice, again, to... They're, like you said, they're actually doing so much to set up so many different storylines that they can then play with for the rest of the series. You know, when it comes to the opportunities in the Gamma Quadrant, the Negus himself, you know, it gives you an opportunity to really dive even deeper into Ferengi culture and the way things actually work there. I mean, just those things alone give us seasons worth of material for Ferengi episodes in Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm.
So about being a father and influencing your son, we get that mirrored in this episode. And Jake, he behaves as he does because he's, I would say, instinctually mirroring his father's values and beliefs, because of course his father has taught him these things, but also he's just simply observed who his father is as a person. And he's naturally being the same way. Krax, observing his father, Zek, seems to have missed everything in that sense. If he's going to model himself after his own father, now the values that he would be modeling are not ones, of course, that we would want, but at the end of the story, when Zek explains to Krax what he should have done, and even to the point of, well, you could have let Quark hold the scepter while you did everything in the background, and then you step in later, you have to imagine that Zek has done this many times.
Right.
And also Zek has positioned himself with people around him to protect himself from those who are greedy, right, who would assassinate him. And apparently Krax hasn't noticed any of this stuff. And the way he talks throughout the episode is, my father this, my father that. He's clearly just looking up to his father and riding on his coattails. And I'm sure Zek is not a hands-on father like Benjamin.
Right.
But it's a little bit absurd to contrast these, because one of them is meant to be comedy and one of them is meant to be showing what real parenthood is. However, in the same story, in the A and B storylines, you are getting a mirroring of two men who are fathers and their sons, and then how those sons are reacting to a situation based on what they've learned from their fathers.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you rightly said, you know, the depth that we're getting with, you know, Zek and his son is very different, right? And it is also meant to be played for comedy. And so, but I think
as a story structure,
right? Exactly.
It's interesting, yeah.
But it is also a place in which we are juxtapositioning the two different value systems, right? Mm-hmm. And one we see actually takes an active interest in raising their children, very hands-on and very involved, and another doesn't. And it's another place where these two things are shown side by side, and the immediate reaction as a person is to say, huh, okay, I get it. One is better than the other. But they don't have to say that in the episode. Nobody needs to have a soliloquy about, you know, parenting and, you know, how hard it is. And, you know, we don't do any of that, which is the beauty of the writing of Deep Space Nine. We are going to show, not tell. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things, you know, that many people get frustrated with, I think, with especially TNG and Voyager kind of falls into that trap sometimes. And then, you know, I think Enterprise kind of goes back to maybe being a little less verbose. But yeah, this is one of the places I just think that Deep Space Nine really excels with the writing, mm-hmm. which is why we love it so much.
Yeah. But one thing that I don't love, or I wouldn't love if they were real and I encountered them, are bombs that are attracted to body odor. That was one troubling thing in this episode for me. I want to keep those things away from the gym.
Yes, that was terrifying, and I 100% agree with you. I am so glad that those things aren't real, because, yeah, No thank you.
Yeah, I'll pass on that, especially on the train. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd make it home if one of those came near the train. So anyway, okay, well, I think we've covered all the points in here pretty well. Any final thoughts on this, and what's your rating going to be for the Negus?
You know, going back through this episode, I was just struck about so many things and how much I really enjoyed it. And I think for an episode, I don't think anybody thinks in their mind, oh yeah, that's the episode where they have really a lot of interesting things to say, you know, because nobody thinks that about Ferengi episodes. And yet this is an episode that has a lot to say and a lot of good things to say. And so, you know, I really enjoy this episode. I like it a lot. And I'm going to give this one 4 out of 5 precisely chilled tube grubs, because it's really a good episode, especially of this first season of Deep Space Nine.
Wow, chilled grubs.
Put a little chipotle sauce on there, or sriracha sauce. So good.
Space sriracha.
There you go.
That would be great. Okay, so yeah, I don't have a lot else to say about this episode other than I think that the Ferengi story is fun, and I really appreciate the story with Jake, both in terms of father-son and especially how Jake tries to help Nog. And I think that's a wonderful message to send. And so since you gave it grubs, I'm going to give it 8 chopsticks. That's 4 pair of chopsticks that we can all use to eat those grubs, because I don't really want to pick them up with my hands. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on the Negus. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So it is a closed group. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Then on the timeline, you will find a post for this episode, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. If you're looking for it for the first time, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact, choose to send to a show, and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not looking for the Vulcans who stole your homework, where can people find you?
Oh, Chris, that's not the Vulcans I'm looking for. I'm looking for the Vulcan who walked by on the promenade. You may have seen her. She was in a blue outfit. Looked very nice. But you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero are the places I'm most active. Of course, here on the network at the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek that we love. There's just so much out there to cover, so we hope you'll enjoy that. There's some great bonus shows in the feed as well. We've got Literary Treks, which is about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We're doing the 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise on Warp 5. Of course, Saddle Up, about Strange New Worlds. And Chris, we just wrapped up Star Trek Picard Season 3, the final season on The Artificial Tango. So everybody go listen to that final episode. It was a blast. And don't worry, we've got more coming to The Artificial Tango as well. So just because the show's finished doesn't mean we're finished with Picard. But you will also find me on the Nerd Party Network doing two shows. One is called Owl Post, all about Harry Potter, each and every chapter of that series, one chapter at a time, and then Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars. But Chris, you know, when you're trying to find the best two grubs on the station, where can people find you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to hire somebody to do that for me. And you can find me when I'm not doing that. You can find me down in the Fire Caverns with Benjamin Sisko and Jake Sisko. Apparently, they are much more intricate inside than the fire caves, and I'd like to check those out. And then, when I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network doing all the shows with you, which you mentioned. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog on a variety of shows. And in social media, you can find me under the username C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active. You can find me on Mastodon, on the Trekkie social instance, and everywhere that's my username, C. Brian Jones. So I'd love to chat with you there. And if you'd like to help us keep the orb and everything else we're doing on the network going and get involved in the network, you can find out how at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We really do need your support to keep all of this going, and we would not be here without those who are supporting us now. So thank you, everyone who has become a patron. We really greatly appreciate your help. Thank you so very much. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to the next discussion here on the Orb. I hear we've got some twins joining us.
Well, Chris, as Double Mint would say, double your pleasure, double your fun. So we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.